WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot.
A lot of work ahead, but that's the job, so we'll get it done.
Speaker Mike Johnson facing challenges in getting the House to reconcile the bill that passed the Senate. Some of his members saying it cuts too much, some saying it cuts too little, and some are stuck in their home districts because of weather-related flight cancellations. 20% of hospitals and healthcare providers could close in New Mexico because of Medicaid cuts making their way through, says Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham.
This is going to have generational, lasting negative impacts.
Court watchers are wondering about a note sent by the jury deliberating the Sean Combs case, saying they're stuck on the racketeering charge.
When the note came in, Combs, who was denied all charges, looked stricken. He sat in a chair with his chin resting on his palm, defense attorneys standing in a huddle around him. At one point, Combs wiped his eyes.
ABC's Aaron Katursky at the New York courthouse. They're due back in the morning. This is ABC News. Beaches in six states will be closed over the holiday weekend because of excessive bacteria. Public health advisories are being issued in New York, Massachusetts, Washington, Illinois, Michigan, and California. No laughing matter in Wisconsin when a train derailed.
The freight train was carrying lumber, diesel, and even laughing gas. That train derailed, causing minor injuries to three train workers. Hartford Fire Chief Tony Burgard says three train engines and 19 cars in all overturned. But he says the diesel was not likely the cause of that evacuation.
So we tried to make the leak as small as possible. There is a waterway, a tributary that does lead into the Rubicon River, that it looks like we are successful keeping all the diesel fuel out of that tributary.
The cause of the leak still under investigation. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
California woman is facing charges for allegedly leaving more than 100 cats inside of a U-Haul parked in a Taco Bell parking lot. Wayne Cabot, ABC News.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Big changes for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks making some record moves in free agency. They waived Damian Lillard, who suffered that torn Achilles tendon. Lillard, who turns 35 later this month, will be paid $22.5 million over the next 5 years in dead money by the Bucks owners. GM John Horst then making a deal to acquire Indiana Pacers center Miles Turner, a four-year deal worth $107 million. Turner is 29 years old. He'll replace 37-year-old Brook Lopez, who will sign a two-year contract with the LA Clippers. To get under the salary cap, the Bucks had to trade guard Pat Connaughton and two future second-round picks to the Charlotte Hornets in exchange for Vasilije Micic, a 31-year-old guard from Serbia. And Milwaukee will also sign 11-year veteran guard Gary Harris of the Orlando Magic. Again, Damian Lillard, no longer with the Bucks. Baseball, the Brewers and the Mets rained out tonight in New York. They'll play a split doubleheader tomorrow. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For the overnight, mostly clear skies accompanied by a light breeze. Morning low temperatures will start off in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. There will be a few afternoon showers and storms with highs in the middle 80s. It's 66 at our studios.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olsen will join us to discuss breaking news as it continues on the state budget and in Washington. Plus, what's worse? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
This is what I love, Madison. There's so many weird things. Bennett's Meadowood Country Club, which is a bar and not a country club, they have an event called Smut and Eggs. You show up for eggs and you watch a porn film while you eat breakfast. I have trouble watching a PG-13 movie when I eat breakfast. It's more of a dinner thing, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a nice group orgy and some pasta.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everyone, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your host, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks for joining us on yet another steamy afternoon across the state of Wisconsin with lots of steamy news for you today. We've got the state biennial budget. We've got the big, brutal bill getting a vote in the Senate, a tie vote with the vice president breaking that tie. We've got some action on RFK's approach to vaccinations and overall public health, getting a big decision from a federal court today. We're going to cover all of that. I've got a fabulous expert guest here to help me explain some of the Supreme Court's rulings of this past week that were incredibly impactful about what lays in the future for us as citizens. His name is Jim Santel. He'll be with me through this entire show. And Jim and I are very pleased to welcome State Senator and ranking member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTanya Johnson. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Senator. Thank you for making time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us what happened this afternoon in the JFC. What was the vote and what are we looking at in the state's biennial budget?
Well, today we had an opportunity to vote on the finalized budget. A lot of negotiations went into this budget, especially on the Democratic side. We were invited to the table fairly late in terms of leadership, but our input made a world of difference in trying to make sure that this budget did as little harm as possible, and we were able to get some good things for the citizens of Wisconsin. So this isn't the budget that we would have chose to create, being a Democrat, but we definitely played a part in making sure that the budget was as palatable as possible.
Tell us about some of those improvements over both the current biennial budget and where Republicans, as led by Senator Lemieux and Assembly Speaker Voss, had offered as sort of a response to the governor's introduced budget.
So one of the major differences where we played a pivotal role was childcare. We know that the governor proposed $480 million for childcare accounts. We know that we were at risk of losing almost 88,000 slots if childcare providers closed their doors. So we were instrumental in getting more than $300 million to keep childcare centers open. It won't be called childcare counts, and that's okay. The name isn't important, but we were successful in making sure that we got $110 million in monthly payments to childcare providers for basic operating costs such as payroll and rent. $66 million for a new state-funded program called Get Kids Ready, and that's designed for four-year-olds, putting those kids, some of those kids, allowing them to be served in daycare centers so they don't have to be pulled out and put into the K-4 programs, but making sure that they're still school-ready. And also, one of the most important things that I'm most proud about is raising the child care rates to the 75th percentile, which is required by state law anyways. But that's essentially giving child care providers a raise across the board for the kids that they're caring for, which is extremely important in keeping their doors open. We played a pivotal role in making sure that reimbursement rates were raised for special needs children. Our state Republicans stopped at around 35%. With negotiations between Democrats, we were able to raise those rates to 42% in the first year, 45% in the second. Another thing that we were able to do, instead of $80 million in cuts for the UW system, we're now investing $256 million over the two-year period in the UW systems, making sure that they're able to stay afloat. So we were able to do some really, really pivotal things in making sure that this budget did the least amount of harm as possible.
Folks, if you're just joining us, the big news out of the state of Wisconsin is that the Joint Finance Committee has approved a biennial budget. Senator, you are the only Democrat sitting on the Joint Finance Committee to vote for this biennial budget. And I think it's incredibly important. Again, these three areas of critical funding, child care, special education reimbursement rates, and of course, the UW system funding. The UW system funding swing alone, again, going from $80 million in cuts to $256 million in additional investment, that's $336 million in swing, plus that additional $300 million for child care, those reimbursement rates for special education across the public school system. If you can, again, we're seeing tweets coming out from Chris Larson, Francesca Hong in opposition. Can you address some of those criticisms of the budget? And can you address some of your colleagues on the Joint Finance Committee from the Democratic Party voting against this biennial budget?
Yes, like I said before, this is not a budget that we would have chose to introduce had we been allowed to play a more pivotal role. Since being elected to this to the state legislature since 2013, being able to vote for a portion of this budget or just having the opportunity to vote for this budget was extremely important because this budget, out of all of the budgets that I've witnessed, truly has a bipartisan stamp on it. Before, it was just the governor and key players on the Republican side crafting the budget. But when those talks broke down and they were at a standstill, then Democratic leadership was invited to the table. These are truly items that we fought for. We had to go and make a decision on what areas would most impact our constituents and the constituents around Wisconsin, regardless of what party that they're from. And I can honestly say that we helped to make a bad budget better. And sometimes, you know, in leadership, that's all that you can hope for or ask for. And in terms of being a leader, sometimes when bipartisan efforts are made, then you have to vote for that on behalf of just the sheer intent. We finally had an opportunity to actually contribute and to actually get something in the budget, and that was worth my vote for this bill. It's not a perfect bill. It never will be when you are operating on true bipartisanship. You know, it was said in Joint Finance that every single budget that they introduce has been a bipartisan effort. And I don't necessarily agree with that, right? The governor signs the budget, true, but we all know what happens if he doesn't sign the budget. You have vulnerable communities and neighborhoods and schools that are relying on those funds and relying on that the budget to be passed. And if it's not passed, you know, and we're allowed to break for the summer, there's no rush to come back and start over. But yet those communities and the schools still suffer. And so because of that, Governor Evers realizes that, you know, the path of least resistance and to make sure that those vulnerable communities don't suffer is to sign the budget. This time we had an opportunity to provide a lot more input, and it showed at the end with all of the things that we were able to accomplish.
If I can be so bold, Senator Johnson, as to make this observation, the Democrats that have seen coming out in opposition with Representative Hong as an exception to this, white folks, right? And I think there needs to be an observation, which you made, I think, quite expertly, and that is communities facing the most acute harms at greatest risk. We have to be attuned to and to understand that sometimes in negotiated bipartisan solutions, the harm reduction needs to be emphasized and elevated as opposed to comparing what is and what is possible to what we would wish for. That is not the delta. The delta is, the difference is how much harm was going to happen with no budget or with a budget under significant delay. And I think we may have just lost the senator. We're going to work to get her back. Jim, I'm going to pivot to you a bit here. I have been through budget negotiations. I was at the county and working with our city counterparts during the sales tax negotiations just a couple of years ago. And I watched Democrats, frankly, that were a bit left, perhaps some very far left, oppose these compromise solutions on largely ideological grounds, based off the failure to achieve perfection. Mm-hmm. And again, I heard from a lot of elected Black leaders, hey, you do not understand the harm that may befall some of our most at-risk communities. I applaud elected officials that take these tough votes, that do not let the perfect stand in the way of the good. Your thoughts on the state's biennial budget?
Absolutely. And so that those folks who come forward and say, we've got to be thoughtful about what's going on right down the street, right? Those operations that are affecting people. And if you place this ideological position above everything else, people are not served. The interests of the community are not addressed. And the other thing that I would say in following up on the senator's very good comment, and she's back with us now, is you and I both know, all of us know, if everybody leaves a room in litigation and even in legislation, everybody's a little bit unhappy, you probably have a settlement that's going to last and make some sense. And you can also, Senator, as you just said, you can explain that to people, as you just did. You're confronted by others of all parties and asked about your vote. You can explain the reasons, the practical reasons for doing it. Everybody leaves a little bit unhappy. We can't get everything we want in a good democratic system. That's your point, right, Senator?
Correct. It is. There were some things there that were really hard pills for me, such as the increased daily rates for Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. Before, we thought that those were going to be $840,000 per juvenile offender per year, it's $912,000 for the first year. And the second year is $1.6 million. So there was some really, really poor decision making and spending in this budget, but there were a lot of really good things to applaud as well.
As I hear you, State Senator LaTanya Johnson, we need to educate, not incarcerate. That has the largest return on a taxpayer dollar. I applaud you for your leadership, for the tough vote, for the tough negotiations. What do you want to say to Wisconsinites that might have reservations? We've got just about 30 seconds left, Senator.
I want to say that this is a proven record right here that when we work together, we're able to accomplish things for taxpayers. And this was a clear indication of bipartisanship. Nobody got everything that they wanted, but we did. We were forced to come to the table, sit down, and make some tough decisions. And that was what was most important.
Accomplishing much in the way of child care, special education, and our university system. Congratulations, Senator LaTanya Johnson, for your leadership in what was a grueling budget debate. We'll be back. Jim Santel and I discuss more right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to thank my co-host for the rest of today for being the guest host on this very program on Friday. Also, big thanks to my colleague, Matt Rothschild, for sitting in the guest host chair for me yesterday. Matt's going to also be here on July 3rd. We have a very special pre-July 4th celebration here on the Maggie Dawn for you schedule Maggie Dawn Show scheduled for tomorrow, July 3rd. Do not miss tomorrow's show. We take a brief break, if you will. We look past with a historian from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We observe our present with Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin, Madison, a political scientist. And then we look forward with a media expert and another political scientist from the University of Wisconsin, Madison, about how do we talk about these things? How do we build bridges? How do we actually reach the compromise that State Senator LaTanya Johnson just discussed with us? Big thanks to the senator for being here. again, she ticked off a couple of huge, I'm going to call them enormous improvements over the budget that the GOP or the MAGA regime here in the state had proposed. Again, to summarize, that includes $300 million for childcare, reimbursement rates that will finally get above the 40% mark, reaching 45% for special education funding here in the state. Instead of $80 million in cuts to the UW system, $256 million of additional investment, making for a $336 million swing. And the one thing that we weren't able to get to with the senator is that there is increased funding for Medicaid in this budget compromise. The increases, those increases will go to help hospitals pay to fund their Medicaid patients. Again, it increases the amount hospitals pay to the state to help fund Medicaid payments, but raising the percentage of their net patient revenue. So this is incredibly important. That fact, the Medicaid improvement, may be so critical in light of the big brutal bill's passage in Washington, D.C. What an odd irony, Jim, that we're looking at the big brutal bill's passage in the Senate. Of course, now the House has to deal with the differences between the big brutal bills that each chamber adopted. But what an irony that the day that our U.S. Senate adopts the big brutal bill with a vice presidential tie-breaking vote, on the same day that our Joint Finance Committee here in Wisconsin passes our biennial budget.
Right. We've got a 50-50 vote in the United States Senate. How fascinating as an historical matter. Vice President comes in and casts the deciding vote. Not surprising, but talk about eking something out. And again, Maggie, to your good points about the content of what's going on in that federal bill as opposed to the state bill, Medicaid, we're seeing, again, huge cuts with respect, and the federal system with respect to medical coverage for people in America, millions of people here. Again, not an easy thing. We always have to struggle through these issues, but the possibility here of doing something positive in an area where our federal government may soon be cutting back, and that will have an impact upon the state of Wisconsin. Here, our budget, as the senator was saying, as you were recounting, making some real percentage changes there that are going to have an impact upon health care in Wisconsin. To the good. May not be the 110% good that everybody was hoping for, but that's what compromise is all about. And I could not agree with you more that we need to be supportive of and even laud the people, including the senator and others, who look at this and say, okay, I can go back to my constituents and I can explain what I have done. And I've got you don't even have to describe it as the best thing I could possibly get. I advocated for this. We've got a good deal here. And maybe not great, but we've got a good deal here, and it's going to inure to the benefit of Wisconsinites.
Well, and first of all, let me just say, from a procedural perspective, folks, if you're wondering what comes next, the full legislature has to take a vote tomorrow. If it passes tomorrow, Corey, I think it is passable without Democrat. I know it's passable without Democratic support. I think there will be some Democratic support for it, as State Senator Johnson's vote from the JFC indicated. Again, that vote, the full legislature, tomorrow, Wednesday. The governor then has 10 days to decide how he's going to wield his partial veto powers and or sign the budget using those partial veto powers. The governor's office has said those elements of the biennial budget that were negotiated, that were compromise solutions, he will not use his partial veto powers on. So again, something to keep watch of here. Another thing that Senator Johnson pointed out to us is that if this budget is not signed, meaning our state's biennial budget, prior to the federal budget reconciliation bill being signed by President Trump, the state could lose somewhere in the ballpark of $1.1 million. Now, again, in the grand scheme, not a huge deal, but that's still $1 million for, again, healthcare in Wisconsin. So there is some time pressure here. Again, a negotiated solution. Jim, we got into this briefly, but I want to ask again, having been in rooms when I have watched Democrats and Republicans negotiate highly contentious fiscal issues, I have always been appalled by both the far right and the far left's penchant for what I'm going to call the easy vote that appeases the base. I object because other people will take the tough votes and actually get the thing done.
Right.
I think it's frankly kind of a cop out.
It is. And it works on a campaign poster then, right? I'm the one who voted for you, for you. What is the impact of that? Well, I didn't vote for something practical once again, and I wasn't the guy who took some lumps also for doing just that. That's the problem.
The poetry of campaigns versus the prose of actual governance. Again, congratulations to Senator LaTanya Johnson and Governor Evers for getting us forward on this budget. Stay tuned. Jim and I dig into the Supreme Court next.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot.
A lot of work ahead, but that's the job, so we'll get it done.
Speaker Mike Johnson facing challenges in getting the House to reconcile the bill that passed the Senate. Some of his members saying it cuts too much, some saying it cuts too little, and some are stuck in their home districts because of weather-related flight cancellations. 20% of hospitals and healthcare providers could close in New Mexico because of Medicaid cuts making their way through, says Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham.
This is going to have generational, lasting negative impacts.
Court watchers are wondering about a note sent by the jury deliberating the Sean Combs case, saying they're stuck on the racketeering charge.
When the note came in, Combs, who was denied all charges, looked stricken. He sat in a chair with his chin resting on his palm, defense attorneys standing in a huddle around him. At one point, Combs wiped his eyes.
ABC's Aaron Katursky at the New York courthouse. They're due back in the morning. This is ABC News.
Big changes for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks making some record moves in free agency. They waived Damian Lillard, who suffered that torn Achilles tendon. Lillard, who turns 35 later this month, will be paid $22.5 million over the next 5 years in dead money by the Bucks owners. GM John Horst then making a deal to acquire Indiana Pacers center Miles Turner, a four-year deal worth $107 million. Turner is 29 years old. He'll replace 37-year-old Brooke Lopez, who will sign a two-year contract with the LA Clippers. To get under the salary cap, the Bucks had to trade guard Pat Connaughton and two future second-round picks to the Charlotte Hornets in exchange for Vasilije Micic, a 31-year-old guard from Serbia. And Milwaukee will also sign 11-year veteran guard Gary Harris of the Orlando Magic. Again, Damian Lillard, no longer with the Bucks. Baseball, the Brewers and the Mets rained out tonight in New York. They'll play a split doubleheader tomorrow. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There's been lots of royal family drama over the last few years, which eventually culminated in a formal estrangement for the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, also known as Harry and Meghan, which sounds a lot less sexy. Head of the not-really-necessary royal outfit, King Charles, has made it known that he's going to buck tradition and wants the Sussexes to be front and center at his eventual funeral when the time comes. The New York Post reports that Charles has made it clear he would like his son Harry to walk side by side with his brother William, who will then be king. Charles has also stated that he would like Harry and Meghan and their children, Archie and Lilibet, good lord, they actually want people to dislike them, to take part in the lying in state and candlelight vigil portion of the funeral. There has been no comment yet from the Sussexes. I'm not being lazy. The Duchess and Duke are actually referred to by the county name. As the Squire of Marinette, Wisconsin, I can confirm this. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price for the overnight. Mostly clear skies accompanied by a light breeze. Morning low temperatures will start off in the lower 60s. Wednesday, mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. There will be a few afternoon showers and storms with highs in the middle 80s. Right now, it's 64.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Wednesday, State Representative Angela Stroud on Republicans supporting lead waterline removal in Superior if they can stick taxpayers with most of the bill.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine co-host with me today. His name is James Santel. You can find his show, Amicus, a Law Review, on Saturday mornings across the network from 9 to 11. We're going to get to the Supreme Court big, big decision from last week. Thanks, Jim, for being in the chair on Friday to handle that puppy.
We knew it was coming, right? Yes. And I knew you were monitoring it, too. I was getting wonderful notes from you about what is this all about, right? As we're trying to digest hundreds of pages all of a sudden of material.
I can be camping and consuming massive amounts of Supreme Court decisions at the same time. I wanted to answer a quick question that came in from our friend Bob in Madison. Hey, Bob, thank you for listening. He texted in on the from WMDX. Again, if you have questions or comments, you can join us via phone or text at 855-752-4842. Again, that's 855-75-CIVIC. Bob, on the Wisconsin biennial budget passed today by the Joint Finance Committee, going to a full vote before the legislature tomorrow, Wednesday, asked this. The Wisconsin compromise budget bill sounds too good to be true. What's the catch? How did we get here? What's going on? And I think the lion's share of objection coming from Dems that I have seen on the Twitter, or what used to be known as the Twitter, et cetera, has been around public school education, that general school aids weren't increased, and we still have per-pupil funding that basically lags inflation. So that has been a point of contention for a long time. And when we look at special education, again, State Senator LaTanya Johnson, joining us for the first segment of the day, pointed out that they have been able to increase the reimbursement rate for kids that are special needs or SPED, special education. If you're in the education field here in Wisconsin, they had been at 35%. Those are the reimbursement percentages. Mind you, our voucher schools are at a reimbursement rate, I believe, of 90%. So why are the public schools getting, for lack of a better term, you know, the pointy end of the stick when it comes to special education? Dems had been aiming at a 60% reimbursement rate. They negotiated up to 42% for the first year of the budget, 45% for the second year of the budget. That is a significant win. Again, that's a 10%, you know, a 10-point increase. They're still 15 short of goal, but like, yeah, that's what happens when you have a Republican-controlled legislature. So I think a lot of the angst is around that public school funding, but that has always been a point of contention. And frankly, if you zoom out and you look at the sorts of legislation that Republicans have been advocating for and frankly existentially advocating for since Ronald Reagan, their objective is the defunding of public education. So in any and every way that we can shore up those funds, especially for our kids that have the highest level of need, in other words, our special education students, that is a significant improvement. Not enough for some, but again, if you happen to be in a royal blue legislative district in this state and you get to just vote no because you'll never have to face constituents that really wanted the compromise, that's an easy no. It's those that represent the communities at greatest risk, those in leadership that are making these hard compromises and taking these hard votes.
And you know, one of the other things that the senator hinted at, we didn't have a chance to go into it in great detail, was the future, right? And you asked a question about this as well. When you do these kinds of things, you send a message to those people, the naysayers, yes, but also the people who understand exactly the civics that we're talking about here today. It's also about the future. Here we have a situation where, again, not everybody happy with this resolution, lots of things you would have preferred to have gotten. But again, we've got to get there'll be another budget cycle coming up all too soon. And maybe it begins to send the message that these pie-in-the-sky aspirations on both left and right simply will not stand. And maybe instead of doing this 48 hours before where we've got to have this all done, maybe we come to, in the wake of the listening sessions, come to some resolutions that are maybe closer to the middle, that great, wonderful middle where government probably should be. We do it in a way that acknowledges that this is government. This is the way it works, and it sends that message about the next time around as well.
And again, I have deep, basically reverential respect for Democrats that have to take these difficult votes, and they do so knowing that, frankly, arguing about harm reduction or harm avoidance is not a politically salient or easy path, that incremental improvements are not always the easiest political sell. But again, it really interesting time. Keep your eyes on what the state legislature does tomorrow. Again, once approved by the state legislature, the governor has 10 days. But keep in mind, keep your eye on the big, brutal bill in our U.S. Congress, because we need our budget before the U.S. Congress adopts the budget reconciliation bill, and it is signed by the president in order to maximally preserve Medicaid funding in this state. I just wanted to give us the chance and give our listeners a chance to weigh in on, to talk a bit about the birthright citizenship decision from Friday. And folks, there are looking to be some big decisions still coming down the pike. There is the 1849 abortion law opinion. That's coming from our state Supreme Court. Again, we're going to have the House and the U.S. Congress vote on the budget reconciliation bill because it's not the same as what they adopted back in May. So lots of things happening tomorrow. Keep your eyes on the news. I had so many reactions to the birthright citizenship case, which actually wasn't the birthright citizenship case that many thought it was. And the first one was, this was a case, and the majority clearly leaned into this quote-unquote technical interpretation or question that had been posed, and that is, can a district court issue a nationwide or universal injunction that materially impacts the rights of parties not before the court? And the majority in that in this decision that came down on Friday looked back to the way things used to be.
History once again. There it is. History and tradition. We've heard that before, haven't we, Maggie?
In the early times, and looking at bills of peace and all kinds of stuff, which we don't need to get into because it's hyper-technical, and to say, listen, district courts have a limited scope. And the idea that nationwide injunctions can reach the rights of non-parties when there may be other vehicles to do so is really interesting. There are problems with this, of course. That is basically what they were saying is go seek class actions. And there were a number of class actions about birthright citizenship and other matters immediately filed on Friday because, frankly, people expected this from this court, hoped differently, but expected and had to plan for this eventuality. But to me, the much broader context here, Jim, is the fact that this court, the majority of this court, seems to a large degree to be both incapable of, unwilling to, and utterly either ignorant or willfully blind to the real harms that yes. are being acted upon people who do not have resources mm-hmm. and access. That is primarily what I see here. And so folks don't need to know what class actions are or nationwide injunctions. What the court did on Friday was say, you have to be able to go find a lawyer and potentially pay a lawyer in order to protect your rights. And I think that that is overarchingly challenging for us as a democracy in this moment, in this particular moment. Maybe 10 years ago, I wouldn't be so concerned about it. But in this moment, I think it's deeply concerning.
Absolutely. And you've got to be able to find that lawyer. You've got to be able to find the courthouse, which, again, the lawyers can do for you. Got to be able to articulate actually your particular harm. And then you've got to be a part of litigation that goes on. And that will happen now, as many people have said, in the wake of this multiple times across America. And, you know, it's so disappointing. I had this same reaction as you did, Maggie, as I'm reading through this and hearing about it, of course, on headlines. And we're on your show on Friday, quite literally, with the ink still wet on the yes. order. And I'm thinking aloud about the oral argument. And it sure seemed to me as if Amy Coney Barrett was getting at something, which is, again, as we talked about, even the budget, right? Right down the middle, right? She seemed to be articulating this view that maybe what the court needs to do, as difficult as this is linguistically and operationally, needs to articulate a rule. As you just said, there are these large mammoth issues out there having to do with things like constitutional rights that apply to every single person. And it seemed as if Amy Coney Barrett was saying, as to those, we can perhaps identify some categories, maybe describe them definitionally. Other things may not be in that large category. And so we define a rule that lower courts said, again, they will interpret it differently. We'll have to have more appeals on all that. This is not an easy question, right? And so sometimes this notion, and again, it's written by Amy Coney Barrett. It strikes me as the kind of thing Alito would write, which is this hard line, bright line test and this approach to litigation and to jurisprudence that permits of no gray areas, strikes me that this is one of those areas where the Supreme Court would have, again, with great criticism, I'm sure, heaped upon it, identify some considerations, as they sometimes do in voting rights cases, civil rights cases, that lower courts should address in deciding whether or not the particular order that I am entering should extend beyond the Eastern District of Wisconsin, should extend beyond these particular plaintiffs, how far should it go? And then you appeal that, right? But give us some latitude to make all that, right?
One, the court doesn't do that. They've seemed substantially disinclined to do that in any of these cases. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that many of these cases, and listen, Donald Trump has accessed the Supreme Court's emergency docket or shadow docket 19 times.
Since January 20th, right?
Correct. Outstripping the totals of basically every other presidency and doing so in the first four and a half months of his presidency, 6 months now of his presidency. This is the problem. Whatever you may think about immigration and its enforcement, immigration and the way that we treat people who may be here illegally is the canary in the coal mine for individual rights. And if you have a Supreme Court that is, one, making access to the courts to vindicate individual rights more expensive and more difficult, while they are constraining the powers of the courts to respond to overreach or outright lawlessness by a president and his or her administration, what you have then is the court very much leaning into itself as the weakest branch. Mm-hmm. And that works only when Congress is able to step up and check executive power, which brings me all the way back to the idea that this court has again and again, specifically in the gerrymandering cases, not acted to ensure that Congress remains truly representative of us, the people. And that is leading to this gross imbalance of powers. We're going to dive a little bit deeper on that. What do we do about this? What do we do next? What does it look like? And are Democrats always playing catch up? We discuss this next. Jim Santel and I, your host, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842. Text lines are open. Little problem with the phone line, so text in your thoughts and comments. We'll be back after these brief messages.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the interview system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators get a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WLAKradio.com/contest-terms.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WLAKradio.com/contest-terms. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here's what we've got right now. And I think if anybody from the Trump team had been candid with American voters back in October, September, or August about what we're seeing right now, I don't think he wins. Because let's zoom out. We've got to see what the Supreme Court decided on Friday when it comes to these nationwide injunctions without reaching the merits of whether or not the 14th Amendment means what it says. Here's what we've got right now. We've got people being snatched off our streets by folks without identification with masks on. They disappear, sometimes for weeks on end. They don't have the right to call a lawyer. Some of them have been then deported to not their country of origin or their citizenship, but to some of the most dangerous places on planet Earth, where they fear further kidnapping, potential torture, without a hearing, apparently. We have an administration who has flouted multiple court orders to stop doing that. We have an administration that, according to many, has illegally deployed military to patrol our own streets to tamp down on a handful of people creating chaos and destroying property. But worse happens when the Lakers win the championship, right? Like, all of this is happening. We're having elected officials taken down and handcuffed, elected officials arrested for doing what they considered to be their job and well within the bounds of their discretion.
And indicted by grand juries, apparently, right? We've got a congressman.
And indicted by grand juries. So importantly, today, relating to birthright citizenship, the government was required to tell a judge, hey, are babies about to be deported? I want you all to pause on that. Because the Supreme Court on Friday was more interested in the process of our court system and less interested in people's individual rights, babies can be deported. And the judge yesterday specifically asked the government lawyer, are you going to start deporting babies? Well, today, that judge's question was answered in writing by the U.S. government. And they said, starting on July 27th, babies may be deported. And I want you all to think about that. Again, the way that we treat folks accused of crimes, the way that we treat people who are here allegedly illegally, is certainly a canary in the coal mine. But consider this. Those whom citizenship is guaranteed under the 14th Amendment are facing deportation as babies in 26 days in the United States of America. Donald Trump, over the last 2 weeks and again today, has made noises about, quote, denaturalization and deporting people who are citizens. With what process? Who knows? But what I can tell you is the Supreme Court will be more worried about the process and the technicalities than they are with the substantive rights of American citizens. Again, these are canaries in the coal mine, and they are dying, folks. It is high time we pay attention to this. Now, the solution, we're not there yet with Congress. Slowly, maps are getting better, but again, the Supreme Court utterly unconcerned with that, apparently. So who is it left to stand up to a wannabe tin pot dictator? Guess what? It's you. And there is a direct line, in my opinion, from the increasing dissatisfaction across the United States in every district, including districts that used to be fairly ruby red. People are not okay with this. People are not okay with stripping citizens of their citizenship and deporting them to who knows where. Imagine a baby being deported whom days ago, you know, like on Thursday, was not subject to deportation. It's not supposed to be this way, and we all very much deserve better. So it's going to be up to each and every one of us. The courts will do some things. And to answer a question from our friend Ross in Crawford County, yes, federal district courts can still enter injunctions that specify the rights of the parties before them. And if the specification through a preliminary injunction or a temporary restraining order that is specifically tailored to provide complete interim relief to the parties before it does provide some relief to third parties within the jurisdiction of that district court. That's still good. That's why what Donald Trump and all of the MAGAs were saying on Friday were outright lies. Right. The Supreme Court didn't rule that he can strip birthright citizenship away. It simply dealt with the process to get there. But what that does anticipate is a flood of lawsuits across the country. And our courts are not equipped for that at their current size. So court reform is going to be necessary. The next thing that I'll share with you is that state attorneys general become incredibly important. Because where a state can articulate standing, a state, of course, is going to be able to litigate on behalf of its citizenry and taxpayers. So we need activist attorneys generals that are deeply concerned about their citizens' rights. Do we have one here in Wisconsin? Only time will tell. But most of all, this is about you. Is it okay for an administration to willy-nilly violate rights when no court can stop them nationwide, so says the Supreme Court? What if they came for your guns? What if they say that women don't get any federal benefits? Is that okay? I say not. We continue our discussion on the other side. Jim and I are going to dig into the big, brutal bill and its impacts in Wisconsin. Phone lines and text lines are...
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Wayne Cabot. Tough travel day ahead. Storm cancellations continue across the country. On top of more than 2,000 flights on Tuesday, the storms are impacting the House floor vote to reconcile the big bill that just passed the Senate. Speaker Mike Johnson says some members left early.
They're on the way back. Of course, we have weather delays all around the country, so there's lots of complications, but welcome to Congress.
The family of Brian Koberger is in Boise for their son's morning sentencing in a deal that spares him the firing squad for murdering four students at the University of Idaho. Luke Bruno lives there.
I think it's just unfair to the families. It allows him to hide. He never had to really go to trial. He never had to, you know, answer to his... I mean, he is answering to his crimes, but not to the fullest extent, in my opinion.
Back to work in the morning for the Sean Combs jury, stuck on one count, racketeering. Another Pacific hurricane off Mexico, a Category 3 named Flossie. This is ABC News.